First today, just how risky is eating poultry? As the demand for chicken and turkey grows, so may the chance of becoming ill from salmonella. Nowadays, that can mean so much more than a touch of food poisoning. Here to explain it to us are David Hoffman. He's the correspondent on Frontline's The Trouble with Chicken. He's a Pulitzer winner who has spent the last few years examining the growing crisis of antibiotic resistance. He joins us this morning from the offices of The Washington Post, where he is a contributing editor. David, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thrilled to be here.
Peggy Lowe is also in the studio. She's the investigative editor for KCUR and Harvest Public Media that follows agricultural issues in the Midwest. Her latest report looks at the risks from poultry processing. Peggy, nice to have you too. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, David, the Frontline report in The Trouble with Chickens rang the alarm less than 30 seconds in. One in every four pieces of chicken carries salmonella. One in four. How surprised were you when you unearthed that one?
Well, I was particularly surprised to find out that the federal government wasn't even checking chicken parts like breasts and thighs that we buy in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
They were checking a whole broiler. So when they got around to studying and checking the parts, they found high levels of salmonella contamination.
Hmm. Why higher incidence of salmonella in the parts as opposed to the entire chicken?
Well, one thing is that they had been setting standards to try and reduce the levels in whole chickens somewhat over the years. But when you cut the chicken into parts, it's a big industrial process in these large factories. You release some of the salmonella from the chicken. So some of it probably was in the production process.
Hmm. David, how many salmonella outbreaks have we seen in recent years? What's the latest count?
Well, there are dozens and hundreds of these. A lot of salmonella, there are 2,000 types of salmonella bacteria, and some of them aren't going to make you seriously ill. But a few of them, particularly in recent years, have evolved to become more nasty. And these bacteria contamination are the kind of things that can go beyond just food poisoning. It can get in your bloodstream. It can aggravate other kinds of illnesses, especially for vulnerable populations like very young children or the elderly.
Hmm. Peggy Lowe from KCUR, you put a very human face on your piece as you talked about a woman named Suzanne Byerly. You wrote that she can laugh about her battle with salmonella today, but she sure wasn't laughing 4 years ago.
No, not at all. And when I reported that she laughed about it, she does find it ironic that she and her husband had gone shopping to make dinner for their family on this vacation trip. And they chose ground turkey to make this spaghetti because it's the healthy option. She said they're always watching their weight, that kind of thing. Well, what they had chosen as healthy turned out to make her terribly, terribly sick. She came down with this same Salmonella Heidelberg that David's piece really focused on.
Yeah.
And she ultimately got better. She's a young mom from the St. Louis area. But, you know, it required hospitalization, among other things. And she says, you know, I fed that to my kids. That's the kind of stuff that really worries her. And you can just buy that in the grocery store. So much of what we pick up is already contaminated with salmonella.
Hmm. You know, David, Peggy just mentioned this Salmonella Heidelberg. Tell us about this particular bacterial strain that you talked about in your Frontline piece. When and where did the medical community become aware of an increase of cases with this particular strain?
Well, this strain's been around. As I said, there are 2,000 strains. And we have to remind ourselves, we live in a bacterial world, right? Nobody's talking about making our kitchens sterile like a hospital ward. We have to live and manage the levels of bacteria. And what happened in the case of Salmonella Heidelberg was that in the Pacific Northwest, as early as 2004, there started to be people coming into hospitals and doctors' clinics with food poisoning that showed they had this particularly nasty and virulent type of Salmonella called Heidelberg that oftentimes, more often than other times, crosses not just from the intestinal system but into the bloodstream and causes complications. So our film tracks what happened with a major outbreak of Heidelberg from raw poultry in the Pacific Northwest, which began in 2013 and extended all the way to 2014. And I would point out that this wasn't just a, you know, kind of a Sunday potluck supper outbreak with a few people that got sick. This was a rolling major public health crisis that went on for more than a year. And we look at what happened, this particular Heidelberg, what kinds of illnesses people got. But also we raise the question, not about the chicken, but about people, right? If this is a public health emergency and people are buying a food that is making them sick, why hasn't our government taken action? Because we know what actions to take. We have experience with this. Why hasn't it taken action to stop the contamination and to keep more people from getting sick?
And the answer to that is what?
Well, the answer we found was that the government felt that it didn't have enough authority to recall the chicken, that it was on a hunt, a needle in a haystack hunt, to pinpoint the source. When they found the source, it was a major poultry producer on the West Coast called Foster Farms, and the company did not recall the contaminated chicken, saying, well, there's not enough evidence. And the federal government said, well, we have two pieces of evidence that it is Foster Farms. And those two pieces were the patients and samples of the chicken from the store. And they went on a pursuit of for a third piece of evidence to make absolutely prove that it was Foster Farms. But meanwhile, in months of searching for that third piece of evidence, hundreds more people got sick. So the real question is, could they have acted sooner?
And ultimately, David, just how dangerous is Salmonella Heidelberg?
Well, we know from this particular outbreak that people that get this food poisoning, usually it's 2 or 3 days, it's very unpleasant. But we know that more than twice the usual rate of people are hospitalized. Usually Salmonella poisoning is 20% or 18% hospitalization. In this case, it was almost 40%. We also know that usually about 5% of the people that get ill with Salmonella develop bloodstream infections. And in this case, it was 15%. And so people that had other underlying illnesses or were vulnerable, they particularly got more sick from something that usually just caused food poisoning.
Peggy, hop in here.
Well, the thing that I found really, really interesting about this in researching my own story and watching David's very fine film is that it's sort of like the inspection service didn't keep up with what consumers want now. You know, more people eat chicken than beef now in the United States because of health reasons mostly. But we tend to buy, you know, like parts. You know, there's breasts and there's wings and there's legs and that kind of thing. And what the USDA tests for is this. And most people don't do that anymore. I remember when I was little, my mom would always buy those whole chickens and cut them up. Well, I don't like to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't like the cutting process. I don't have the time, that kind of thing. So for convenience sake, we all buy these pieces in parts. So that's one part of the interesting piece here. Secondly, to David's point about Foster Farms, I read into your piece, I think, David, that Foster Farms really failed to do the right thing and voluntarily recalled all that poisonous chicken. For instance, Cargill.
I mean, they initially failed to do the right thing, then they finally, too late, they tried to do the right thing.
Right, like a year later.
No, it was 15 months later. And, in this case, they had a small recall 15 months later. 600 people were sickened before that recall.
Right. And what I found interesting in your film, David, was that the Cargill VP you talked to, because it was Cargill behind the Salmonella outbreak that I reported on with this Suzanne Byerly, they did the right thing up front. They voluntarily recalled something like 36 million pounds of ground turkey. Do you feel that way, David?
The Cargill recall was for Salmonella Heidelberg, the same bacteria that got in the chicken. And if you contrast the two companies' behavior, you see one made the voluntary recall and the other didn't. And I'd like to point out to your listeners that this is a subject of which we have a lot of experience, right? The Food and Drug Administration regulates our other foods like peanut butter, ready-to-eat foods. And there was just an announcement yesterday that ConAgra, another big food producer in this country, paid a huge fine and agreed to a prosecution for peanut butter that had salmonella in it. And 600 people got sick there. And they were prosecuted and paid a fine. And so I sort of wonder, you know, why is it we give poultry a pass?
And what's your suspicion, David?
Well, my suspicion, which I think comes out in the film, is that we have a regulatory system that is not vigilant enough. I think the regulators were intimidated by a few lawsuits, and they said they don't have the authority. But, you know, this is why we have a president and a Congress, right, to make clear that they have the authority to ask for recalls. Recalls are a tool. We use them for auto airbags. We use it for peanut butter. But we don't. In this case, it was not used for raw chicken that had high levels of contamination with a bacteria that causes major illness.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about the safety of the poultry that you and your family consume every day. Our phone number here, if you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. We're joined today by David Hoffman. He's a correspondent on Front Lines, The Trouble with Chicken film, and he's a contributing editor at The Washington Post. Peggy Lowe is also here. She's with Harvest Public Media and an investigative editor for KCUR. You know, Peggy, what steps do processing plants wind up taking to reduce the risk of bacteria developing in the poultry products they handle? What are they doing?
Well, there's all kinds of steps that they take. They take these, for instance, once the carcass is produced after it's defeathered and all that, they bathe it in, you know, a number of processes. And they cool it down because that helps eliminate the salmonella too. So there are some things they do. But what they fail to do is further on down the line, when these parts are getting cut up, there's nothing down there that they're doing that's mm-hmm. sanitizing or even inspecting. Mm-hmm. Like David said at the top of your show here, you know, pieces and parts of chicken and turkey were not even... They're not even inspected. They're not even tested, rather. Mm-hmm. And that's there's a plan that the USDA has to change that, but that's not coming for a while. And the poultry industry is fighting that.
Hmm. David, any sense of how many poultry processing plants there are in this country these days?
Well, as a society, the United States, we consume 8.5 billion, I said billion, chickens a year. Mm-hmm. So there are enough big industrial factories to process those 8.5 billion, 90 billion eggs. And it's an enormous industrial enterprise. We visited the Cargill plant where the turkeys are processed. And, you know, you feel like you're maybe in some kind of auto assembly factory, mm-hmm. not in an agricultural facility. It's industrial. It's big. And as a result, when there's an outbreak, when there's a bacterial problem, it spreads to more states and more people. Mm-hmm. We don't have mom and pop agriculture anymore in the United States, and we're not going to. So we need to figure out if we're going to have industrial agriculture on this scale. We enjoy cheap chicken. Everything about this system appeals to consumers. They buy more chicken than ever. How do we make it safe?
Mm-hmm. David, remind us who's responsible for ensuring that salmonella and other bacteria isn't making it out the plant door, and does this agency have enough inspectors or not?
The agency is the Food Safety Inspection Service of the United States Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. It's not a question of enough inspectors. They have inspectors in every single plant. The issue is the levels of bacteria that go out. And by the way, we're not going to get rid of it. It's never going to go away completely.
I was going to ask you about that.
The issue is, can we get the levels down? Can we reduce the amount of salmonella contamination to levels that won't make people sick?
Why can't we wipe it out completely, David? What's holding us back from just,
because,
you know,
we live in a bacterial world. You know, you would be a force of nature. Not even God is going to eliminate all the salmonella. It's part of our world. The chickens have it from when they're born. It's endemic. Small amounts on the chickens and turkeys everywhere in the farm, in the hatcheries. It doesn't make them sick, but some varieties make us sick. So what's really at issue here is, can we simply create a food supply that's safe enough for human consumption? And we have experience with this with E. coli 0157, which is a nasty bug that got into hamburger back there in 1993 and made a bunch of kids in Seattle sick and they died. We figured out how to start getting these bacterial levels down. Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise. This is not rocket science. We know how to do this. But the point of our film was to show that the regulatory system essentially broke down. Health crisis blew up. And nobody did anything for a long time. And I think as consumers, this is not a story about chicken. I eat chicken. I like chicken. This is a story about people and public health.
Mm-hmm. But no question, the agency, it has enough inspectors, and they're actually housed in some of these plants, Peggy. Is that how this works?
Yes, that's true. But, you know, here again, the USDA is this really odd governmental agency, because it's not only... you know, the watchdog, like they have the inspectors that they put in the plants. They're also the promoter of U.S. agriculture. So they're very much connected with the industries. And those industries spend a lot of money lobbying and fighting a lot of these regulations, too. So there's this sort of oddball situation, in my opinion, with the USDA.
But I would say, I think that what you say is right. But here is a case where they were trying for years to set performance standards, and they set them which they call performance standards for how a plant should operate, based on very, very skimpy sampling, very infrequent. And we have to remember, meat inspectors, through the whole history of meat inspection for the last century, they were taught to look for things they could smell, they could see, bruises, feathers, broken bones. Bacteria are invisible. And as I said, we live in a bacterial world, and they need to adapt much more quickly to the threat from bacteria than from the threat that they used to look for to something they could see with their naked eye. They won't see salmonella looking at a raw chicken.
I think, too, the one thing to take away from this, Steve, is for consumers and people out there listening to this going, oh, my gosh, there's all this contaminated chicken at the grocery store. The biggest thing is you have to cook all poultry to 165 degrees. That kills the bacteria. So that's the highly important thing to take away from all of this. You really must protect yourself, I think, in the end, by cooking the chicken enough.
And so stick a thermometer in there and find out if you're reaching 165.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, David, one of
there's a danger in that recommendation. I agree with that. But are we the last line of defense? I mean, if we have this whole federal food safety inspection system, if we have laws that say zero tolerance of salmonella in peanut butter, why do we essentially put the burden on the consumer for raw chicken? Well, is that fair?
Well, I wouldn't put the burden on the consumer. I'm just saying, in the meantime, before any of these things change, and they should change, that this is one of the ways you can protect yourself.
For your cookout tonight, I agree with you. But for the way we look at our government, I think we can demand more and should demand more.
Well, and speaking of consumers, David, one of the issues you talk about in the frontline piece is how many home cooks handle raw chicken, and that may be contributing to the spread of salmonella. What should we know about handling chicken at home?
Absolutely. Good. Excellent question, because the problem is more often not the cooking. Most people like well-done chicken. We don't like our chicken rare, but you should cook it to 165. But where the contamination happens is before you cook it. It's called cross-contamination, and it's the process of handling the raw chicken. For example, many people tell me they wash their chicken. Bad idea. You wash it off, you splatter the bacteria all over the sink. People use a knife and a cutting board. Then they use the knife that they cut the raw chicken with on the lettuce or the tomatoes. Or they say, oh, I'll turn the cutting board over. And then they smear that salmonella all over the counter, where it can live for up to 3 weeks. So this cross-contamination, the process by which you handle the raw chicken, is where most of the illnesses come from, not from undercooking it. And I've seen several studies that show people think they're good at this, but even when they think they're good, they make mistakes. Our kitchens are not hospital wards. We can't expect them to be sterile. We live in this bacterial world, so we really need to be careful. I would say with raw chicken, treat it with real respect. It's dangerous.
Let's go to some calls. Doug from Lawrence. Doug, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about the poultry we eat. Good morning.
Good morning. You guys are actually talking about one aspect that I was going to bring up, and that is the preparation and the work in the kitchen, which I think you've pretty well covered there. One flashback point that I would add to the Cargill versus Foster Farms issue is when you're dealing with whole pieces, it's my understanding that most cooking will take care of any surface contamination, you know, when you're cooking legs or thighs or breasts or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in the case of Cargill, where you have ground meat, there's a much greater risk of that bacteria being in the middle of a patty of turkey or something like that. So that might help explain why Cargill was more forthcoming in recall than Foster, because Foster was probably basically requiring the final prep to kill any potential bacteria there.
Right. Peggy, low way in here, would you please?
Yeah, Doug's right. The contamination rate that the USDA says is the average for ground chicken is 40%. And for instance, in a chicken part, like a breast, is 27%. That said, mechanically separated chicken It's 82%. Now, that's that stuff like those patties you might buy at the grocery store or chicken cutlets and stuff like that. It's because these blades, the process of it, you know, can take that salmonella and really press it further into the meat.
Mm.
So that's also kind of some stuff to be wary of.
Okay. So be aware, be know what you're doing in the kitchen, I guess, would be a couple of words of parting advice here, Peggy.
Absolutely. You know, cook it to 165, lobby your congressperson to strengthen the USDA regs, and be very, very careful.
Okay. I want to thank David Hoffman. He's a correspondent on Front Lines, The Trouble with Chicken Film, contributing editor at The Washington Post, and Peggy Lowe, an investigative editor for KCUR and Harvest Public Media. Thank you both very much for your time. Sure appreciate it.
My pleasure.
My pleasure.